Hi, my name is Eva Lianne Veldkamp, and I started my career as a maritime officer sailing the big blue container vessels on our oceans. Now I'm leading the working group from the Center for Ocean Policy and Economics, which is the co-working group on psychological safety, bullying, and SESH in the maritime sector. Also, I am a policy coordinator for the Dominica Maritime Administration. Lastly, I try to promote the great educational tools of Northeast Maritime Online, NEMO, which allows people to be educated on everything they want to learn.
Hi, my name is Ria Rao. I am the owner and founder of Yachting International Radio. I have been in media since I was 19 years old, and I cover yachting and the wider maritime industry. Happy International Day for Women in Maritime 2023.
Welcome, everyone. The theme for this year is mobilizing networks for gender equality.
As a result, we have managed to pull together some absolutely stellar women from across the entire maritime industry, leaders in their field from around the world. Please do tune in.
I'm Sabina, I'm from Germany. I'm currently head of the official body for supervision of maritime training for seafaring. That means for ship mechanics and officers' assistants who go on to become officers at sea. I've been an officer on tankers as well for 8 years before doing a stint as nautical surveyor and also client rep for a while, and then and STCW course instructor, and now I'm here, and in this capacity I'm also a Goodwill Maritime Ambassador. So I'm trying to get young people, especially women, to get interested into the maritime careers.
Hi there, my name is Corinne Rayson. I am the owner of the Crew Coach, and I serve super yacht crew in the areas of leadership and mental health. The Crew Coach has been in existence since 2009, and we have served thousands of crew members. My background is in organizational psychology, counseling, and business, and I was an ex-seafarer myself over 10 years ago.
I'm Kim. I've spent about 3,000 days on construction vessels around the world. I'm an offshore manager, client rep, a hydrographic surveyor, and a good cook and a really bad YouTuber. And I'm trying to make dresses. So that's about it.
So I'm Koni Dunia from Nigeria. I started my seafaring career in 2005, being a cadet on LNG carriers, trained in the Glasgow College of Nautical Science in Scotland, and qualified as an officer in 2008. I sailed as a deck officer, delivering gas to gas terminals around the world, and let's see, in 2013. Since then, I have been in various shipping administrative roles within NLNG, a gas company in Nigeria.
My name is Wendy Clark. I am the lead captain and driving force behind the marine operations side of Sunburst Yacht Charters in Tampa, Florida.
I'm Nancy. I'm from Jakarta, Indonesia. I'm a professor at the Maritime University.
Hi, I am Marian Cerqueira, and I have been part of the maritime industry for 17 years now.
I work at sea on board super yachts as a crew member for 14 years. And for the last 3 years, I have become an advocate for seafarer rights, especially around work and sexual harassment and abuse inside the maritime sector in the branch of yachting, while helping women who are working on board yachts scale their careers inside the interior department. There is a massive need for education and support for crew. We have a lot of problems on our hands. I feel like the industry is 10 years behind most industries, and I'm so glad that we're coming together to make a difference. Common issues that we have in our industry is around discrimination, bullying, sexual assault, and toxic leadership. Challenges that face females within our industry is largely around getting work on deck, which I find unfathomable that in this day and age, we're still dealing with those sort of issues. They are more than competent, but they're not getting employed based on their physique or what they look like. Another issue that we're faced with is a lack of care if there is a pregnancy. There is no maternity leave or return to work plan for crew members that do fall pregnant, so their lifespan on board is quite limited. The other issue is what clients have told me, being made to wear provocative clothing when they do not feel comfortable in doing so. So with a chef's uniform, normally they are covered head to toe. But this particular client told me that she was made to wear skirts that were extremely short and made to clean where she was exposing herself in an inappropriate one, an uncomfortable way for her. I know that women face many challenges in the maritime sector, from gender and race discrimination, sexual harassment and abuse, and so many others. But today, I want to shine light on a challenge that all women face on board and offshore, and one that never really gets talked about, and that is the lack of education about a woman's menstrual cycle and how to use it to benefit female productivity. I myself, after a massive burnout in 2013, figured out that to maintain our work-life balance on board and beyond, and to boost my productivity, I needed to work with my menstrual cycle and not against it. Because here's the thing, women have been conditioned to adjust to a man's workplace, environment, schedule, and approach to productivity for a long time, instead of exploring productivity at work through a female paradigm, which is the key to unlocking your performance, genius zone, and thriving in every area of your life as a woman. And I just can't say this enough. Learning to sync our female hormone cycle with our work and life schedule is the ultimate biohack to harness our energy, productivity, and work-life balance, and also our mental health that's very intertwined with our hormonal cycle. So each phase of our cycle provides us with amazing superpowers, and it is essential to know what those are and when they happen so we can plan ahead to take advantage of them. I believe that it is time to change the stigma, stereotype, and taboos around menstruation and menopause by taking our power back and educating ourselves in a way that leads the industry to recognize that there is a better way to support women's productivity on board and beyond. And I personally do not wish for equality, which means each individual or group of people is given the same resources or opportunities. I wish for the maritime sector to give us equity, because this recognizes that each person has a different circumstances and allocates the exact resources and opportunities needed to reach an outcome.
In 2019, I started the Female Seafarers Association of Nigeria, which is really in response to the number of females that have come into the seafaring career and the issues that they are challenged with. So typically, discrimination is the order of the day for us here. I mean, I use my company even as an example. I think the first female cadet was recruited in 2003 or so. And if you look back, this is 20 years now, with 13 gas carriers, I don't think we have up to 10 officers, female officers today. So it's like, you wonder what the challenge is. How are we not able to grow over 20 years? How haven't we been able to overcome the issues of female seafarers? Just because people just don't care. People are not interested. And it's the sort of work that we're doing, pushing the narrative, pushing it where it matters. And then the issue of harassment, just lending a voice to it, and also trying to guide the young females and maybe offer a layer of protection as much as we can. Sadly, the government, everybody here is committed to issues of female seafarers, but you write them and nobody responds. You call and nobody picks, but publicly, like, oh, we're doing a lot for the female seafarers, but that's in the open. That's what everybody says. But in reality, nobody is interested. And it's a harsh reality we have to accept. And we have decided not to give up, but just keep pushing and reinventing ways and approaches to these issues. We're hell-bent on ensuring that females who want to venture into seafaring career really are given the opportunity. And I think most recently we discovered the mercy ships, and they're more than happy to receive the girls, and we're in the process of trying to get them enrolled onto their platforms, and where necessary they can go on board and get sea time, most especially for them. Sadly, the girls are not even looking for money at this point in time. It's like, let me get the sea time and get the next COC, because we also have some of the girls whose COCs have expired without working. So imagine the hassle of trying to renew an expired COC. You haven't worked, you haven't earned money, you don't even have seat time on that COC. So a myriad of issues, but we're taking it one step at a time.
Do any of you other women feel that you have the same issues, that there are policies that are put in place, and when it actually comes to being put into action, nothing happens? Anybody else experience that?
Offshore construction is where I work. It's 98% male. And about 2 years ago, I had a drunk mariner try and break into my cabin. And it was pretty serious. I didn't know if I'd get out of there alive, to be honest. I really was worried. I raised that with the head of a Dutch company, a very big Dutch company, construction company. It was one of the family owners of this multi-billion dollar company. And he assured me that this man would be removed from the vessel within 24 hours. He was on there for another 10 days. And every time I saw him, you know, like the impact on me was quite horrible. And it's endemic. And I've worked in Nigeria as well quite a lot. I worked in Port Harcourt quite a bit. And I've seen what it's like there as well. And even within the hierarchy, it's not just gender-based. There's a very strong hierarchy. There is in Asia as well. But for women, of course, trying to break into it, it's absolutely impossible. And I saw how a lot of Nigerian guys were treated on international projects. And they were earning nothing. They were like 6 week trip offshore. And they were walking away with like $100. It was just insane. Just slavery. And then the few women were treated even worse. So it's endemic. And not just in Nigeria, not Africa, not Asia, it's everywhere. North Sea, everywhere.
Sorry, Kim, that you had to experience things like that. They sound awfully familiar to a lot of women that were on board of ships and were working. And I think it's so important to have this conversation. According to the BIMCO report of, I think it was 2 years ago, there were only 1.2% women. And if you look at the officers with an COC, people who are actually paid officers, that's only like 0.5%. So that means a lot of people stop after their apprenticeship. Because if you have to work in an unsafe environment like this, it's not safe for women. It's not safe for anybody. It's an awesome sector to work in. But it's also important to show the things we have to solve to make it better, right?
If you have, and I can guarantee you, knowing the stats on females being sexually harassed or sexually assaulted, if you've ever been in that position, do you know who to turn to, and have you had to try and reach out in that regard?
I gave a talk about this about 2 weeks ago to one of my clients. And in this particular instance, I'm not in the business of naming companies or people or even governments, because in this instance, the one example I gave was that an ambassador to a country was involved, and the senior management of a company was involved when it was raised to them, and still nothing really significant happened. And that it's not just an isolated case. I can tell you that I've had my sector, construction, offshore construction, dozens of quite serious assaults, a couple of them in sexual nature, but a lot of them just aggressive or quite violent physically. I also mentor a number of women around the world and in the industry, and they have similar stories as well. And no one seems to really respond. There's the odd person that stands out as a shining example of a true champion of trying to make change. And a lot of them that care, they might be in quite senior positions, but they're not in a position to change policy and to drive through significant cultural change in organizations. And that's what we need to see.
I thought that this is really a general problem that we have. I didn't have that on board. I had that ashore. And actually, for me personally, the hierarchical structure on board was safe. It was giving me an option to just be an officer and be above all that. So as soon as I was an officer, I was in a better position, and I just had to make sure to project that a bit as well. I was never completely standoffish. It's just to have a certain distance. And in that regard, for me, that was very good. But the thing is, women don't know where to turn, or not only women, but people who have suffered assault don't know where to turn ashore. So how should they know where to turn if they are on board? So if you don't have staff on board that is supportive, that has learned to deal with that, you're not going to know where to turn to. I was at a conference last week, European Maritime Pilot Association. So the pilots are usually also a very conservative bunch, but they had a talk from a female pilot that I thought was very inspiring. And she really took my heart as well. She had to try, I think, 3 times to get into pilot session. She was master mariner, and they brought arguments like, we don't have a toilet for women on board. And I heard another talk about establishing a system to help people with S trauma response. And they were trying to establish that in France for pilots. They did for aviation. As a first level response, there's a peer support system. So they established pilots with a certain training to talk to anonymously. Everybody who was in an incident could call somebody and talk. And I think that's maybe something that we could try to do for women as well. Female seafarers or female people in the maritime industry, just to be able to have somebody to talk to, even if they are not in a position to actually change something, but just to offload.
One of the biggest things is statistics. I don't even think a lot of it gets recorded. And unless you record it, unless you have the documentation to prove what's happening, then it's hard to drive change, isn't it?
There needs to be somebody who is not part of the hierarchy. It needs to be somebody who is not on board, somebody who, it doesn't matter the pressures, the political pressures, the people that are in power, the people that are in charge, that will actually take a report, will be able to say, you need psychological help from somebody who is actually qualified. You need proper psychological training from somebody that has knowledge of the maritime industry.
I think with regards to knowing where to go to or who to go to, it's important to also refer to the regulation. We have the ISM code, which really stipulates how vessels should be run, managed. And in there, you have the role of the DPA, and again, the master has that responsibility of ensuring orderliness, peace, and the well-being of crew on board the ship. Sadly, the situation that we see recurring is like what Kim just shared earlier, whereby the masters are sometimes not interested or would rather make it go away. So I know of one incident where someone reported to the master of being harassed, and rather than deal with it, they wanted to take the person that harassed the female off the ship, send him home so that the issue just goes away, rather than looking into it and, where possible, escalate it to the managing office. Then you also have the DPA, whose phone number is pasted on the wall, and you're supposed to call the DPA when maybe you don't feel safe, because if the master is not willing to deal with the issues, then you should call the DPA. Sadly, I think of one other incident. Again, Kim referred to it. There is that whole connection between the people on the ship and the office. Maybe they're friends, they went to the same school, and those sort of things. And it hampers, I think, their judgment, because then people are not taking responsibilities as required by the positions they occupy. So you see that there is also a failure in the ISM code itself, because if people are not respecting it, then what do we need to do? Because at the end of the day, structurally, there should be levels of accountability. And I think it's the sheer lack of accountability that has gotten us here, because companies don't feel the need to take responsibility on these issues. So even when the regulation says you should do everything within your capacity to ensure the safety of individuals on the ship, if I say somebody is harassing me on the ship, clearly you should appreciate that that is going to impact my safety. And if you don't feel the need to do anything, then you clearly are not interested in my safety. Because a lot of the times we forget about mental state and well-being of individuals. We focus more on the physical aspect of safety. If you go out on deck without a hard hat, it's like the world is coming to an end. But it's okay for someone to harass you and you are traumatized. It's okay for that to carry on. So I think there is also need to start to rebrand what safety really means on the ship. It's not a physical thing. I think we've conquered the physical space. Let's go into the internet. Let's focus safety on individuals, well-being of people, and their mental state as well. Because when it comes to the physical, we've taken care of that.
Most of you are part of the COPE working group we currently have on psychological safety, bullying, sexual assault, and harassment in the maritime sector. And I think what we accomplished right now is already a great leap forward in what we need to do. Because hearing you, I think we can all agree that there's a big gap in our safety system, right? Like Connie just said, we focus on physical safety, but there's another aspect of safety, psychological safety. If you're not feeling safe, if you are in a state of trauma also, research showed that it changes your brain activity, it changes your ability to work responsibly. It's pretty serious that we don't recognize that gap in our safety system. Looking at the assault and harassment happening right now everywhere, it's not only for women, it's for all people who don't feel safe or were bullied, who are harassed and assaulted or abused. I think it's really good to look at that and see what kind of an environment allows those things to happen. And if we look at that environment, then we have the ability to change. The COPE working group, we have been changing policy already. We managed to get mandatory training on psychological safety, addressing bullying and sexual assault and harassment as part of the mandatory training for seafarers everywhere. It starts with educating people, I think. And then we have an opportunity to look into the other stuff that is going on. So what about accountability and responsibility of companies?
I just wanted to add that I think that the safety as we regard it now and the psychological safety, that they are very intimately connected. If we are talking about safety, it's usually, or incidents, they usually come down to the so-called human element and human factor. And then if you go deep, most of the time that the people working there are under a lot of stress and sometimes really not in a very safe psychological space to begin with. So I think if we improve psychological safety on board, we also improve the physical safety a lot.
I'm in a very, I guess, unique situation compared to my fellow panelists here. I've always worked for very small companies. It's been one or two levels of people between me and the owner. So I've always had direct contact with our policymakers, so to speak, the owners of the vessels. And in my experience, which I'm starting to find out has maybe been a little rare, I've had very good support on board. I've had fantastic mentorship. I've always felt safe in a crew sense that I could always go to the first mate or the captain and talk about what's going on. The situations that I won't even say were dangerous, I will just call them uncomfortable, especially in the spectrum of the things that we've been talking about and the industry has been talking about, have all come from passengers. So in my sector, you can get this really tight-knit crew where you feel supported and you have this family atmosphere and you can talk to the people that you work with and talk to your bosses and your captains to create an environment where you do feel like you can talk about the things that are unsafe or bothering you or wearing on you physically or mentally, because long-term charters can get that way. You're at somebody else's beck and call for basically 24/7 for the amount of time these people are on board. So different type of just emotional stress while you're there. So as captain, I have found that it is my duty to make sure that I listen to my crew. And because we are a small group, I can kind of infer some of their just physical cues. Like, I know when my first mate has had a rough day. Like, we can talk about it. I might even start the conversation and just be like, hey, buddy, you're looking tired. Like, what can we do as your crew to help support you in that? My chiefs do same thing. You know, you can just tell after a long charter or even just a long day on charter where people have just been like poking at him all day. You just want to be like, hey, you know, do you want to talk about what's happened? So I think that in the smaller boats or even in the yachting industry where the captain has more influence, I think, over just the environment that the crew gets to work in, there's less levels for them to have to answer to. I think we've started to see a bigger difference from there with getting the captains of the vessels involved and training them in a way to help support the crew. Unfortunately, I don't have any experience with the bigger companies or offshore, and I'm sure that the red tape and the bureaucracy is so extremely frustrating. My heart goes out to all of you because I have so much empathy, but I could not even imagine the barriers that you guys have had to push through.
It's great to hear your perspective from a leader position, because I think the biggest thing you can do right now is two things. If you're in a position of leadership, you can really listen and look at the people you lead and then ask what they need and ask how they are doing. If you're not a leader, you can be an ally, right?
I think I'm a bit different from all of you because I had no sea experience and I never been a seafarer. So I just joined this industry. I joined the Maritime Academy sort of 12, 13 years ago. And it was hard in the education sector. Like, I came here to be a teacher, but then the experience, it's just so much like the stereotypes of a seafarer. I'm sure you know what I mean, like, here, it's like seafarers are male and they cannot stand a woman. I experienced that early in the beginning of my career in the academy. So it's like, I attracted like so much attention just because I'm a woman. And it was like something that I had to bear because I made the decision to join this industry. Like, you know, they were all seafarers, so you should have expected that to happen. Like, but this is an academy, like, educational. Like, why should I expect such things? But then it still happened anyway. And too bad, it's that no one I could turn to. And I experienced there was an acquaintance because she was there for a short period of time. And it happened to her very bad. I wouldn't want to share the story, but it was so bad. But then she turned to me and then I tried helping her, taking her to higher authority. But then she got the same response as I did, that like, maybe it's your clothing that's still appearing. And then like, it's always the victim blaming. And I felt so bad about it. And then from my students, then I learned that actually at sea, they experienced the same. So imagine they were female, they were women, and then as cadets and Asians, like all these inferior feelings just stay with them during their cadetship. Even now they have become officers on board, they still experience that, and even they didn't know how to turn to, unless they're, sometimes they said like what Wendy just said, that they are the higher ranks that came open to them, like what's happening with you, and then they could start talking, basically, because they said that maritime industry, it may look big, but it's a small community. Once you talk about it, like everyone or companies will hear your name, then no companies will want to hire you. So that's a fear that I didn't know was possible, but it happened. So that's why they say like, we better just keep quiet about it unless the captain or the chief mate asked us about that. If we felt comfortable, if anyone disturbed their comfortness. So that's the first thing. And the second one is about our chain. I don't know about Westerners like you guys, but like for us in Indonesia, I don't know about all Asians, but here, when you got it, it's like, it's your fault. You felt so much shame that you did not want to open about it. Even to your family. If you open this to your family, and it happened here that this female officer opened about that to the family just said, just marry the guy. She was raped and then she was asked just to marry the guy. If he was willing to marry you, then no case, no issues. So she decided to just let it go. Even when we went to the police, then the police would suggest the same. It's nothing. It's not an issue. He wanted to marry you anyway. So why did you refuse to marry him? So that is the case in our culture. It's the shame. By marrying, then the family would not bear any shame and she could live. But how would you marry? How could you do that to a rape person, like marry the rapist? So what can be done from my perspective as a part of the education, or is there like to build the awareness, which is very lacking. I tried bringing this up to our campus. No one pays attention and no one is willing to. It's like, it's not a case. It's not that important. Everyone is treated equally on board. I know, I haven't talked to our students, like the female ones, like they were made to wear things like male clothing. They should not wear a skirt, no long hair, no makeup. So why cannot they be women on board? Why do they have to look like men? It should be a safe space for everyone. But it's like making the way, like it's not necessary. So it's a hard topic to discuss here. Not everyone is open about it.
Diversity comes with vulnerability, right? So if you look into what divides us as persons, sexuality, gender, culture, where you were born, how you look, how you behave, what your education was, what you were raised to believe. I think if you look into those differences, then you also see the vulnerability that comes with that. Sometimes there's a really big shame culture. And because this stuff is also about your most intimate things, it's about your body. It's also quite natural that you feel ashamed because it's your body. I would like to thank everybody because it's really brave to speak up about these things.
I think we try to mix things up like this with the idea that men need this too. No, we are talking about women as women when we talk about ourselves in whatever case it may be. We tend to take ourselves down a level. And we start talking about everybody else. We are looking at an industry in maritime that is 98.8% men.
they have their support structures. Obviously, with only 1.2% women, there is absolutely fuck all in place for women, and it's time for that to change. And the only way that's going to happen is if we stand up to the current system. If something happens to a woman on board, I don't care whether you're trans, I don't care whether you're gay, I don't care whether you're black, purple, green, or white, or young, old, the fact remains she should not be re-victimized. She should be the one that has recourse. The person that is responsible for that attack, for that harassment, for whatever that complaint is, needs to be taken off board immediately. Because then there's an investigation. And if that investigation finds this man guilty, then he should lose the ability to go out to sea in any maritime position ever again in his life. I don't care how good of a captain he is, or how good of a chief officer he is, or how good of an engineer he is. If he thinks that any woman on board is less than him, he doesn't belong in an industry that requires you to be months away at sea on a very enclosed space with absolutely no escape. End of.
I think the lack of punishment is really why sexual harassment has thrived in the industry. Like you said, sending him to the next ship feels like he was just being rewarded. So maybe Eva, as part of the work for COPE, maybe it's time to start maybe mandate punishments, because with environmental protection, we all know you drop a drop of oil in the water can send you to jail immediately. You don't even have to be proven to have done it. You're in handcuffs already. I've been on ships where a captain was just taken away simply because there was black soot coming out of the funnel. I think the lack of punishment is really why we are here. You look at, for instance, the Merchant Navy Code of Conduct. It says there, if you harass or assault somebody, it should be dismissal right away. But it shouldn't be just dismissal to the extent that you have the opportunity to go to another ship. It should be dismissal and withdrawal of certificate of competence, because clearly you are not competent. I think it's one strong message that maybe need to go back to the core, because it's one thing to enlighten people and educate them. If there's no repercussions for their actions, it's just going to be word of mouth and they just carry on doing what they're doing.
I think what we want to do is have people have empathy for the things we are saying, because what we've noticed right now is a big gap, because 98.2% are male, and sometimes they don't see the problems. They don't feel it, because they didn't experience it maybe themselves. In order to change policy and to change how things are, not only policy, also how people are, how criminals, you know, are seen and are punished, I think you really need to recognize that this is a thing you have to punish. You have to hold people responsible. You cannot send someone back to sea who abused somebody. You cannot ethically do that. But in order to have a system that protects people, you first need to see it. I think when you believe that everybody has the ability to see somebody else, like their own daughter, maybe, or like their own wife or sister, if you have the ability within you, you can then make decisions that protect the people you are feeling, right? You can see on a global level, women standing up for their rights, for the things that they're enduring and the things that are happening to them. We really need to support each other, because I think if we keep continuously doing that, then we will change the things that need to be improved.
I don't even know where to start. I've got so many things I could say, because you know what, Rhea, I was falling into the same trap. I was going to say I've been on ships with 300-400 crew on there, because large construction vessels, where there's a lot of, for example, Filipino ABs, Filipino riggers, and there's like a subculture on some of the lower decks that's invisible, and yet there's abuse going on there, and guys that have been on there for 6 months. And I'm thinking, oh yeah, but you're right, it is very, sometimes very specific about women. And there are so many different cultures. And Wendy, what you were saying about the yachting culture, the waffy culture, the what, the yachting culture, but it's a hugely different thing. But you've got a tight-knit crew of maybe 5, 10 people. I've been on 20-meter multicats doing survey, and I've been on these big pipelay vessels with hundreds of people. And it's a totally different culture. And then, of course, you've got the different Asian, African, European, North American, all of these different cultures that have to get on this powder keg. There's a ship, and it's a pressure cooker on there, especially if you're there for a long time. And I think, look, Eva, we could say, yeah, we want a bunch of men to get empathy for a change. You're like, how are you going to make that happen? So I think what it comes down to is that we all know that there's only 3 or 4 things a sailor needs to be happy, right? Good food, a safe, secure, comfortable cabin, and good communications back home, back to the beach. And one of the key issues is actually with all of this is communication. Because if you're alone on a ship, and I've been in situations where the entire crew has a very hostile environment towards me, and I know other people have been in similar situations, especially if you're on there in an antagonistic role, like I've gone there as a client rep at a project that's going down the pan, and my job is to be picking apart the contract and seeing what's happening. Are they safe, and are they doing things to specification, and are they following all the codes of conduct? And then, of course, I'm doing it as me, a bit different from the average sailor out there. And if there's not good communications, and for me, I run a fleet of 7 vessels sometimes, 8 vessels, millions of dollars a day on a big project. And if it happens to me, how much more will it happen to a junior female cadet or a cabin, somebody cleaning the cabins in housekeeping? It's endemic. And the one thing that we need to make sure, I think, above all else, is that woman has a safe and secure way of communicating effectively off the ship. And that goes to the communication structure of vessels and the cost of Inmarsat every month and all that kind of stuff, where they give us like 100 kilobytes of bandwidth for like $1 billion. It makes it really difficult to open channels of communication to talk about these things if you don't have any way to actually communicate. And then the email doesn't cut it. Even a voice comm doesn't cut it. You really want that visual contact. You want that immediacy of knowing there's somebody there that actually cares. So I think that's what I'd say about it. That's common to all of these experiences.
We were talking about the shame that comes with your culture. I know that it goes deeper with your culture. We have to address those issues as women straight across the face of the planet, because culture aside, I think it's safe to say that any woman that has found herself harassed, abused, raped, we spend a lot of time wondering what it was that we did to deserve it and blaming ourselves. And that is straight across the face of the planet. And that is just something that has been built in us from the male sort of dominated hierarchy that we all tend to still live in.
I think that's where the allyship comes in, right? So it doesn't matter if you are, if you're an ally, you're with more people backing you up who could be the same. That's where the allyship, I think, lies. The first captain was on board of the first trainee ship I did for 1/2 year on a big container vessel. I met him like 10 years after, and he asked me about my dad. And I thought that was a really weird question to ask. Hi, nice to see you after 10 years. How's your dad? And I asked him, why do you ask about my dad? Yeah, he made a really big impression because he shook my head when I met him and he said, now you are responsible for my daughter. And he looked at him like with his piercing eyes. And the captain assured him, yes, I will take care and I will make sure that she's safe and I will protect her. And then he told me, before you came on, because we saw you on the muster list and we know that you were coming. So before you came to the ship, I gathered all the crew together and I said, there's a young girl coming in here. She's 19 years old. She's just coming from school. She's green as grass. If you touch her or if she feels unsafe or abused, you will go home immediately. I will not investigate. I will not question you. There's no discussion. If she reports something, you will go home.
We were talking about the shame that comes with your culture. I know that it goes deeper with your culture. We have to address those issues as women
straight across the face of the planet, because culture aside, I think it's safe to say that any woman that has found herself harassed, abused, raped, we spend a lot of time wondering what it was that we did to deserve it and blaming ourselves. And that is straight across the face of the planet. And that is just something that has been built in us from the male sort of dominated hierarchy that we all tend to still live in.
I think that's where the allyship comes in, right? So it doesn't matter if you are, so if you're an ally, you're with more people backing you up who could be the same. That's where the allyship, I think, lies. The first captain who was on board of the first trainee ship I did for half a year on a big container vessel, I met him like 10 years after, and he asked me about my dad. And I thought it was a really weird question to ask. Hi, nice to see you after 10 years. How's your dad? And I asked him, why do you ask about my dad? Yeah, he made a really big impression because he shook my head when I met him and he said, now you are responsible for my daughter. And he looked at him like with his piercing eyes. And the captain assured him, yes, I will take care and I will make sure that she's safe and I will protect her. And then he told me, before you came on, because we saw you on the muster list and we know that you were coming, so before you came to the ship, I gathered all the crew together and I said, there's a young girl coming in here. She's 19 years old. She's just coming from school. She's green as grass. If you touch her or if she feels unsafe or abused, you will go home immediately. I will not investigate. I will not question you. There's no discussion. If she reports something, you will go home.
When we're talking about the greater maritime industry, there are hundreds of crew on board. Nobody gives a shit. Every man that rapes a woman, every man that sexually harasses, every murderer of a woman has come out of a vagina. Trying to make an ally of somebody who has absolutely no respect for the female race at all is impossible. The only way to make it matter to them is by stripping them of their ability to be at sea and by charging somebody who is known to be an offender more times than one, who has been able to get back on board. The company that employs him should then be fined massively, millions.
Yes, agreed. You raised a really good point there into the mother side of things, the mother wound, maybe.
Is it possible that SDCW, for example, ever require training for this awareness or gender-based violence awareness, like that sort of training, and it's required for all seafarers? So once they violate this course, because they haven't been educated and they still violated it, and then they can be charged based on that ethical code, for example. Should we aim in that direction? Many times, I found with the male students that they were not aware that what they were doing was harassment. Only recently, they were aware that it's harassment. Like, they just cover it with when the male or the females got angry, and then they just said, oh, you're so sensitive, we're just joking. It's no joke, but it happens many times, so making a required training on these things, I think it should be required. Because when there is optional training, you know what? It's always say, oh, it's gender issues. It's only for the women. It's only for the females. That's what happened. Like when I started a small seminar about gender issues in our campus, all attendees, you can expect it that they are women. No, oh, it's about gender. It's a woman thing. It's woman issues. It's supposed to be for the men, especially. We know what we are, and they don't know what we are. So it should be for them, but they refuse to attend such events. No, it's not for us. So it should be required. If it is required, I think they have to sit for that.
I think what we're doing now within IMO, gathering support from all the member states, and on the front side, we have a lot of support. You cannot disagree protecting people, but behind the scenes, we got the same things you hear everywhere. Oh, you should just get used to stuff like that. It's a part of the industry. But what we managed to do is to create training provisions in mandatory training, so in the SCW, on addressing bullying and sesh. But if you only look at that part, you are re-victimizing. So you're saying, so you were abused or harassed or assaulted. And if you only on the sesh part. So what we did is also create competence on psychological safeties to see it, if we can provide education for people to know how to create a safe working environment, a psychologically safe working environment. So that's the two things we started with, the education part. But like you really accurately concluded, there's more to do, right? So this is only the first part to say, okay, you hurt somebody. Maybe it's unintentionally. Maybe you didn't know, but now you know. So now you know, you can be held accountable because you're responsible for your own behavior, right? And if that behavior is hurting somebody else, you should just apologize at least. And if did something that was crossing more boundaries and really hurt somebody else or was hurting, then you should be held accountable. You should be punished, or you should have some kind of consequence of your behavior. And I think that's the main thing we are looking to do. Maybe within the ISM code, because there the responsibility for companies and organizations are described in the safety management code, but maybe also in other areas.
I think there's a very specific dynamic that happens on a ship. So particularly after a big crew change, you'll see a culture start to emerge. And I think there's this theory, the broken window theory of the neighborhood. So if there's one broken window that's left unrepaired over time, it's a sign of encouragement to other people to vandalize and encourage the decay of that neighborhood. And a ship is like that. In fact, even more so, it's accelerated. Because it's this pressurized system, very artificial environment that's detached from the real world in many ways. So after time, quite quickly, minor bits of banter, joking around, having a laugh, making the odd inappropriate comment. And if it goes unchecked and it's allowed to expand, that's when it becomes a really toxic environment. And it shouldn't be up to the woman to turn around and say, actually, don't say that to me. Don't speak to me like that. Don't. It should be the other people that say, that's not acceptable in our culture. This is not the 1800s. Fuck off.
I think I'm somewhere in between Ria and Eva in that regard. I think we need consequences, but we'll only get the consequences when we have allies, because who's meeting out these punishments? It's most of the time men as well. So we need to educate them, we need to tell them, and we need to get this empathy. And I find that it works. I've seen it last week with a female pilot. She was talking to an almost all male audience, and they really empathized. And I think it changes a lot. I found it myself on board as well. I came on board vessels with all male crew as female cadet, as female officer. And usually it takes a few days for them to get used to the concept and to get to know me and to get to see that I'm doing my work, but it worked. And I had one situation on my head where I had to get another person off, a male person. And I had the support of the captain, and I was talking to the crewing agency, and he got taken off board immediately, next port. But I saw him on the crew list for another vessel few weeks later. So I called the crew agency again and I said, okay, you have the possibility now to choose between a second officer going on a chief officer and an OS, and you choose wisely. They took him off, but it was a crewing agency for several companies. So I think it's not sufficient to do it on a company level only for ISM. It must be with certificate level punishments as well. So that should be governmental. There is some change already, but it should be more, of course. We need to tell our stories to get that change.
My advice for female crew is, if you are feeling uncomfortable on board, please make a report or reach out for help. It is not worth putting your mental health at risk, because the impact can be long lasting. Know your values. And this is a big, big topic, but we drive our decision-making process through our values. And what I've noticed, if you do know your values, you are able to make a decision a lot quicker. I'm going to leave it at that because there is a lot that I can share here. I know that we have an incredible panel of women here that have wonderful pieces of wisdom to share with you.
I do talk again to some of my clients, and I'm going to use a word that's going to lose half the audience that probably isn't here anyway, which is the men. Patriarchy. If you think about it, like for thousands of years, men have written the codes, the laws, developed the practices, defined who has access to credit and finance, political power, the ceremonies and rituals and traditions of society. All of that stuff has been written by men for thousands of years across almost all of our cultures. And the cumulative effect of that is that there's an inherent lack of friction that they have in doing almost anything in contemporary society. And that's not a luxury that women get, nor other minority groups as well in many instances. So, you know, that's the scale of what we're fighting against with this. And the problem is, because it's by men for men for thousands of years, it's invisible to most of them. They have no idea the scale of the, effectively, the privilege that they enjoy. And also for women, quite often, we don't get to understand what that privilege looks like in detail. We see it as a black box external from us. We know it's there, but we don't know what it feels like to be inside it. Now, I've got a slightly different perspective, being transgender. I was inside it, and now I'm outside it, and I felt it change like that. So it's an insurmountable, almost, amount of structural reform that has to happen, and it will take generations. And the offshore industry, the maritime industry, is entrenched with it. 98% male is entrenched with it. More than all, the military's got more women. No, right? So if a woman comes to me, and they do, and they say, so how do I get into this? What's it going to be like? I'd say it's a fight worth fighting. That there's a great culture there, but you have to be strong. You have to stand your ground. You have to absolutely know that. I say to them, I'm always there for you to turn to. No matter who else ignores you, you can always speak to me. And they need that knowledge, and they need to know that there is somebody there that will always stand up for them and be on their side. And I think that's important. But if you can give them that, and if you give them a real sense of the understanding of the reality of the battle, because it is a battle, really, that is worth doing. It's worth doing because we need to do it. And if you're strong enough to do it, then there's a great career out there. And there's nothing quite like the feeling of the rhythm of a vessel when you do those days and those trips, you know, that rhythm. I haven't been now on a ship for about 2 years, and I miss that. I hate it and I love it. And it's part of my DNA now, 3,000 days of doing it around the world. So that's an experience that you'll never get any other way. And it is magical.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of always the parting words from every female I've ever talked to in the maritime industry, is that the rewards are there, but you have to be an extremely strong person. And you have to know yourself and trust yourself. Work hard, kind of work harder than your counterparts to make the same progress and all of that. But I guess if the parting words that we want are positive, it's that this industry allows for you to learn so many different skills and kind of explore your own education and your own strengths in a way that very few other industries allow you to do. So if you feel the calling of the sea, I mean, go for it, because you'll find your niche and you'll thrive. There's places for us to thrive in this industry, and find it and do it, because it's amazing.
It's extremely rewarding and it's extremely versatile. I have found nothing that is quite so challenging, but changing as well. I really love being at sea, and I have to say I had more negative experiences on shore them on board. So, yeah, and I didn't start off strong. You don't have to be strong to get there. You just have to know where you want to get and persevere. I think that's that. Get a strong support group, maybe. And that's what I'm trying to do as well, support. So I think we're on a good way, and there's more women speaking up and more women showing their face in the maritime industry. With more, we'll get more. And my hope is that one day women on board will be just normal.
For all the women wanting to enter the maritime industry or that are part of the maritime industry, I say, know your boundaries, know your seafarer rights, learn about your menstrual cycle, reconnect with it, harness your productivity level through it, have an offshore counselor to keep your mental health and well-being in shape. Always listen to your intuition. It knows best. And lead by example. Use your voice and always stand up for what is right. Don't be afraid to do it differently and righteously, because your actions pave the ways for others.
In closing, I would like to call on everyone to make an effort, no matter how little and wherever you are within your sphere of influence, make that effort to ensure that we all close the gender gap. Efforts are ongoing all over the industry in different capacities and different respects. For every individual, I think it's time that you look around you and see how you can contribute. It's something as little as being an ally to a female next to you. That will spur and encourage her, and hopefully will have the ripple effect of progressing women in the industry, being role models and a reason for attracting other women to the industry. While it's good to attract women, women in the industry already have to feel safe, have to be in a good place to be able to attract others to come in.
Positive takeaway for people who are watching this and who are considering or hearing the call of the sea: you should listen to that call, I think. Because in my experience, it's almost like it calls your heart or something. And that's a good thing. If you feel like you should do something, then you should take that space and make the best of it. If you're like intrinsically motivated to do something, or if you feel called to do something, then most of the time, if you are brave enough to listen, then amazing things can happen. I think working at sea is pretty magical at some point of times. I know sailing into a wide ocean at night, for example, and seeing the stars reflected on the water, you have two universes in there. And that's just like insanely magical. The rhythm of the smell, the allyship. If you have a good team and if you are protecting the team so everybody can be themselves and just do their work, then it's really awesome, because you're just sailing that ship and you have so much responsibility as a person and as a team. It's like very adventurous and very cool sector to work in. And in the yards or in the service industry for shipping, the maritime sector is a very cool place to work in.
We would like to thank everybody who participated, and we thank you for tuning in.
Please do connect with us so that we can talk about equality in the maritime sector, not just this day, but every single day of the year. Thank you very much.